Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. If you're looking for the seismic shift that revolutionized television comedy, you have to go back to the 1950s and the visual and immersive innovations of Ernie Kovacs. Ernie was a guy who was not afraid to try new things. In fact, I'd say that Ernie was a guy who was afraid not to try new things. And the new medium of television served as the perfect playground for Ernie. For example, he attached a kaleidoscope to a camera so that he could make it look like he was vacuuming the ceiling. And this was 35 years before Lionel Richie was dancing on the ceiling. Josh Mills is the editor, along with Ben Medell and Pat Thomas, of Ernie in Kovacs Land, writings, drawings, and photographs from television's original genius. Josh joins us now to share his special connection to Ernie, how Ernie changed television, and exactly who he was.
He was a comedian in the 1950s. He died in 1962. And unlike many comedians of that era, he was not a stand-up. He wasn't a performer in that sense, but he was a very visual comedian. And he did start in newspapers, and then he went to radio, and then he went to television. But the thing that he's most known for is his visual humor. And it's somewhat like the silent era, but it's very unique to Ernie. It can be very arty. It can be very weird. Yeah, it's, again, I'll describe a square to you.
Yeah. He's really, this is a phrase that's used quite a bit, but I mean, it seems especially appropriate to Ernie Kovacs about a guy being ahead of his time.
Absolutely. He was, and the thing that I always get back to with Ernie is, how did he know it would work? In the 1950s, there was no precedent for this. Maybe silent era, but I mean, for television, everybody was looking at it as, you know, essentially theater. There's no four walls. There's just three walls. And Ernie broke all the rules very early on, would let you know that, hey, I'm on television. You're watching me. I'm, you know, doing this for you. And very different from a lot of comedians in that era.
Mm-hmm. You have a personal connection to Ernie Kovacs. What is it?
Well, my mother, Edie Adams, who was my mom, and she was married to Ernie, and Ernie was her first marriage, her first love, I think. And so I run both the estates of my mom and Ernie Kovacs.
Is the female half of this married couple about to appear in a show based on a comic strip?
Yeah.
Well, Tony has it. The male half of the show is the comic strip with a cigar. And Tony knows who it is. You want to say it, Tony?
Ernie Kovacs and Marilyn Monroe.
You think that it's safe to say that Ernie Kovacs was the love of your mother's life? How do you know this?
Well, I asked her, and she pretty much told me. My mom was married three times. My dad and my mom actually got along well after they were divorced. But it was pretty obvious that Ernie was the guy. I think that, we lived in the house when I was a kid, the famous Beaumont Drive house that Ernie and my mom lived in. And there was Ernie. He was omnipresent. He was everywhere. He was on the walls. There were TV guides. We still had the den that was his infamous den that he had, that was very sort of macabre and weird and very manly, had suits of armor, had a fire pit, a wine cellar with cobwebs that the NBC crew had come in and sprayed to make it look like it had been there for 100 years. So it was, Ernie was always around. And I think that kind of told me something too.
Mm-hmm. And also, I would say something else that told you something, if we use the old phrase, actions speak louder than words, is what your mother, Edie Adams, did in terms of taking care of all the artifacts of Ernie's life. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, my mom was really special in that way. She was hired in the early 50s to be on Ernie Kovacs' show. So she was on a bunch of his early programs in Philadelphia and later in New York. But she saw firsthand how special he was. And when he passed away, she had heard from other people that networks were either throwing away Ernie's things in the Hudson River, or they were wiping them and using the tapes as weather reports or as blank tapes. And my mom in the mid-60s essentially decided, this can't happen. And she got a quitclaim, got a lawyer, And she went to all the networks and said, if it says Kovacs on the box, I will buy it. So for that, she is sort of the patron saint of television preservation, one of the early adopters when there was really no understanding of, you know, other than repeats, what else, where else were you going to see this?
Is there a holy grail? Is there one piece of something, a particular episode from one of Ernie's TV shows that you say to yourself, man, I wish that had not been erased?
You know, Ernie was on many different networks at many different times, so you really had to look for him. There are entire seasons. I mean, all of the Dumont stuff is gone. That was the stuff that was put in the Hudson River, much like the Johnny Carson New York Tonight shows were literally dumped in the Hudson River. So there's a whole swath of things. But there is one thing that's not even an Ernie tape. There is an episode of a David Susskind show in the early 60s, maybe late 50s. And they're talking about television and its direction and where it's going. And it's David Susskind, Ernie Kovacs, Rod Serling, and Sheldon Leonard.
Wow. What a great panel.
There's one photo that I've seen, and it blows my mind. And if anybody has it in their, you know, barn attic, you know, we'd love to find that.
Yeah, because that's a Mount Rushmore of entertainment, those four guys.
Yeah, it's about humor. It's about innovation in television. I would love to see that.
I would too. Yeah, it's a shame you picked a good one. It's too bad we'll never get to see that. Ernie was not afraid to experiment with the technology of television to generate laughs and blow people's minds. What are a few of your favorite Ernie TV experiments?
It's funny because there are a million places you could start with that, but the one thing that I think that Ernie does better than anyone is that television, even then, it was sort of like if you were a radio star, they just kind of pushed you into television because that was going to be the next big thing. Ernie and everything was scripted and everything was patter. Ernie takes his time. And there are moments where things don't work and there are things that go wrong and he doesn't care. And he's completely happy with that. And in fact, it's better when those things happen. He can ad lib. He always said the best ideas I ever had was 15 minutes before air. So I think he was really into the idea of ad libbing. Ernie was like, whatever happens, happens. If it falls down, so what? If it breaks, so what? And I don't think I've ever seen anyone more relaxed on television than Ernie Kovacs.
One of his shows, in fact, his first network show, Kovacs Unlimited, which aired on CBS, it didn't have a studio audience, and Ernie wanted it that way. Can you talk about why?
Yeah, Ernie worked very small, and because he wasn't a stand-up comedian or someone who was really versed in all the years of slogging it out in the clubs like so many comics we've heard about, he really worked to the camera. So there were points in his show where you could hear when he did have an audience, he would say to the audience, okay, don't watch the stage, watch the monitors because you won't get it. And that was the brilliance of Ernie, was that, you know, a performer like Jack Carter or Jackie Gleason or whatever, they would feed off the audience and the energy. Ernie didn't feed off of that. He never did. It was all the crew and the stagehands and the actors, that's where he got it from. And he really wanted to make it small.
One of Ernie's most famous recurring segments was the Nairobi Trio. Can you tell us about the Nairobi Trio?
So this is the thing, and I recently watched a clip my mom talked about this. So it doesn't sound funny, but what it is a syncopated music video, essentially, of three people in gorilla outfits, hats, overcoats, and it's they're kind of conducting and playing music along with this song.
Mi, sol, la, re, fa, re, sol, do, mi, do, fa, re, sol, sol.
It's not inherently funny, and there's no sort of punchline, there's no real joke, but it's the tension. And there are two other people that are, and the interesting thing is the Nairobi Trio had many different people in it. My mom was in it, Jolene Brand was in it, Jack Lemmon was in it, Tony Curtis was in it. You never knew because they were all wearing masks. They would do it live and Sinatra would pull off his mask. I mean, it was crazy. But it's one of those things that people are just, you're waiting and you're waiting and you're waiting and what's going to happen. And I think that was the brilliance of Ernie, was that he kind of pulled you in. Whether you got it or you didn't get it, or maybe you were the kid that kind of read a couple of Mad magazines in the 50s and were like, I don't fit in, that was for you. And I think that that was the genius of Ernie, was he kind of pulled in everybody from the margins and also in a weird way changed their perception of comedy.
Ernie also created several comedic characters, including the poet Percy Dove Tonsils. What's the origin story behind Percy?
I think there was a guy in New York who used to read poetry on television, and I can't remember his name off the top of my head. And I think that, you know, Ernie made fun of people who took themselves very seriously, whether it was a politician or someone reading poetry or anyone. My mom would say, that's the first person that gets a pie in the face.
You're using larger olive this week. Well, it's so good to be surrounded by my friends on the crew. And today, the man who's taking my picture is the Henry Armstrong Jones of the TV industry. Norman, he's shooting me. He said I put on a bit of weight. It's only baby fat, my dear.
He wasn't political. He wasn't topical. He wasn't that kind of humor. So I think anybody that was taking themselves too seriously was up for a bit of lampooning. And I think that was where Percy came from.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any other favorite Ernie characters besides Percy?
I do love this character he does called Miklos Molnar, because it is a Hungarian chef and he's Hungarian. And it's basically he's doing his dad. So everything is very deep, and we have put boar into this, and we have to have this, and it's very thick Eastern European accent stuff. But there's this great episode we have on a DVD box set where it's a parody of Howdy Doody. This guy is the host, and he's watching Howdy Doody, and at some point he just takes scissors and just cuts the strings.
Maybe this little Howdy Doody have too much boar.
Boy, that's a good one, Buffalo Miklos. Boy, you sure are a funny man. I have a funny one to tell you boys and girls, too. A very amusing thing happened to me on the way to the studio tonight. I was coming down the street, coming here for the time of my life, doing the old Howdy Doody show, when all of a sudden, I was so...
The kids are crestfallen and, you know, are very upset, but he just can't take it because the thing is so stupid.
Yeah, very well said. Ernie's upside down empty orange juice container experiment sounds a lot like the 360 degree image rotation show that David Letterman did back in 1986. Would it be fair to say that Ernie was an influence on Dave?
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this a few times. Meryl Marco, who was a writer on Letterman's show, is a big Ernie fan. And what she told me was the writers were huge fans of Ernie. They would go to the Paley Center, which was then called the Museum of Broadcasting in the 80s. And that's where a lot of their ideas came from. And but, you know, I think Letterman has said he's a bigger Steve Allen fan than he is an Ernie Kovacs fan. I think he liked Ernie, but I mean, you know, I loved Letterman. I still love Letterman. But, you know, when you see the pencil at the camera and you see so many things, you're like, that's just Ernie. I mean, it just is. And, you know, I love that Conan O'Brien, when he took Letterman's seat, had a photo of my mom and Ernie behind the guests. So every night I would watch, you know, Sarah Silverman or whoever, and I would see my mom and Ernie behind them, because he knew that Ernie was sort of the guy.
Yeah, yeah. What other comedians besides Letterman and Conan O'Brien did Ernie influence and inspire?
Wow. Well, my mom worked with a couple of times Gary Shandling on It's Gary Shandling Show. And here's a guy who was a stand-up and really lived the stand-up lifestyle, but he wanted to break the fourth wall. He talked to the people on his Showtime show. I remember a special he did that was really funny. He did this thing where he had a special from Vegas, and he was like, oh, everybody in Vegas gambles, even at the airport. And it was literally like a roulette wheel for your luggage carousel. And it was like the luggage would come down. You could bet on red or black or whatever. And I was like, that's so Kovacs. And I think Gary Shandling was one, and Alan Zweibel, who was a writer on Saturday Night Live and It's Gary Shandling Show. he was a fan. I think the Saturday Night Live folks, for sure. I have talked to Terry Gilliam about this, or Monty Python. He was a huge fan, presented a great Kovacs event in London in 2019 as an influence. So Laugh-In, I had a phone call with George Slaughter yesterday, who basically told me, like, most of my stuff came from watching Ernie because his wife, Jolene Brand, was one of Ernie's cast members.
Hmm. If Ernie Kovacs were still around today, what do you think our TV shows and streaming services would look like?
I think they'd look the same because he'd be doing it on YouTube. I think he'd be doing it on the internet. I don't think, unless someone offered him a boatload of money, I don't think he'd be doing television. I think, you know, Ben Model, by the way, who's a co-author, and I should mention Pat Thomas of this book, Ernie and Kovacs Land, Ben basically surmises, he's also our archivist, that Ernie would have been a film director because he was kind of moving in that direction. There is a CBC interview where they talk about this, and he wants to make Eugene, another character of his, the silent character, into a film that he was going to direct with Alec Guinness playing Eugene. So I think Ernie would be probably immediately proceed or post his death. I don't know how to say that, right? He would have been doing films, but I think eventually he would have, you know, the internet, computers, that would have been his thing.
Josh Mills, thank you very much for joining us today. Congratulations on Ernie in Kovacs Land. It's a terrific book and a wonderful tribute to this comedic genius.
Well, thank you so much. Do, me,
do. Josh Mills is the editor of Ernie in Kovacs Land. Find out more about Ernie at WPR.org/beta.
I think there is something in so many of these Becker Fagan songs about people kind of racing toward their doom.
Coming up, Alex Papademos gives us a whole new way to look at and listen to Steely Dan. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.